Last Men in London. Preface. Though this is a work of fiction, it does not pretend to be a novel. It has no hero but man. Since its purpose is not the characterization of individual human beings, no effort has been made to endow its few persons with distinctive personalities. There is no plot, except the theme of man's struggle in this awkward age to master himself and to come to terms with the universe. This theme I seek to present by imagining that a member of a much more developed human species, living on Neptune 2,000 million years hence, enters into our minds to observe the terrestrial field through our eyes, but with his own intelligence. Using one of us as a mouthpiece, he contrives to tell us something of his findings. The shortcomings of his report must be attributed to the limitations of his terrestrial instrument. This book is intelligible without reference to another fantasy, which I produced 2 years ago and called Last and First Men. But readers of that earlier book will find that Last Men in London is complementary to it. In both, the same Neptunian being speaks, formerly to tell the story of man's career between our day and his, now to describe the spiritual drama which, he tells us, underlies the whole confused history of our species and comes to its crisis today. The present book is supposed to be communicated from a date in Neptunian history later than the body of the earlier book, but before its epilogue. The last section of the chapter on the war, though it makes use to some extent of personal experience, is nonetheless fiction. It will be obvious to many readers that I have been influenced by the very suggestive work of Mr. Gerald Hurd. I hope he will forgive me for distorting some of his ideas for my own purpose. My thanks are due once more to Mr. E.B. Rieu for many valuable criticisms and suggestions, and to Professor and Mrs. L.C. Martin, who read the untidy manuscript, for condemnation and encouragement, without which the book would have been much worse than it is. Finally, I would thank my wife both for hard labor and for other help which she is apparently incapable of appreciating. Let me remind the reader that henceforth and up to the opening of the epilogue, the speaker is a Neptunian man of the very remote future. September 1932. William Olaf Stapledon. Introduction. The Future's Concern with the Past. Men and women of Earth, brief terrestrials, of that moment when the first human species hung in the crest of its attainment, wave-like, poised for downfall. I, a member of the last human species, address you for a second time from an age 2,000 million years after your day, from an age as remotely future to you as the Earth's beginning is remotely past. In my earlier communication, I told of the huge flux of events between your day and mine. I told of the rise and fall of many mankinds, of the spirit's long desolations and brief splendors. I told how, again and again, after age-long sleep, man woke to see dimly what he should be doing with himself, how he strove accordingly to master his world and his own nature, and how, each time, circumstances or his own ignorance and impotence flung him back into darkness. I told how he struggled with invaders, and how he was driven from planet to planet, refashioning himself for each new world. I told not only of his great vicissitudes, but also of the many and diverse modes of mind which he assumed in different epochs. I told how at length, through good fortune and skilled control, there was fashioned a more glorious mankind, the 18th human species, my own. I hinted as best I might at the great richness and subtlety, the perfect harmony and felicity of this last expression of the human spirit. I told of our discovery that our own fair planet must soon be destroyed with all the sun's offspring, and of our exultant acceptance even of this doom. I told of the final endeavors which the coming end imposes on us. In this, my second communication, I shall say little of my own world, and less of the ages that lie between us. Instead, I shall speak mostly of your world and of yourselves. I shall try to show you yourselves through the eyes of the last men. Of myself and my fellow workers I shall speak, but chiefly as the link between your world and mine, as pioneering explorers in your world and secret dwellers in your minds. I shall tell of the difficulties and dangers of our strange exploration of ages that to us are past, and of our still stranger influence upon past minds. But mostly I shall speak of men and women living in Europe in your 20th Christian century, and of a great crisis that we observe in your world, a great opportunity which you tragically fail to grasp. In relation to the long drama which I unfolded in my earlier communication, it might well seem that even the most urgent and the most far-reaching events of your little sphere are utterly trivial. The rise and fall of your world-moving individuals, the flowering and withering of your nations, and all their blind, plant-like struggle for existence, the slow changes and sudden upheavals of your society, the archaic passions of your religious sects, and quick changes of your fashionable thought, all seem, in relation to those eons of history, no more than the ineffective gyrations of flotsam of the great river of humanity, whose direction is determined not by any such superficial movements, but by the thrust of its own mass and the configuration of the terrain. In the light of the stars, what significance is there in such minute events as the defeat of an army, the issue of a political controversy, the success or failure of a book, the result of a football match? In that cold light, even the downfall of a species is a matter of little importance, and the final extinction of man, after his 2,000 million years of precarious blundering, is but the cessation of one brief tremulous theme in the great music of the cosmos. Yet minute events have sometimes remarkable consequences. Again and again this was evident in the great story that I told. And now I am to describe events, some of which, though momentary and minute in relation to the whole career of man, are yet in relation to yourselves long drawn out and big with destiny. In consequence of these momentary happenings, so near you yet so obscure, man's career is fated to be the weary succession of disasters and incomplete victories which I described on an earlier occasion. But the account of these events, though it is in some sense the main theme of this book, is not its sole, not even its chief purpose. I shall say much of your baseness, much of your futility, but all that I say, if I say it well, and if the mind that I have chosen for my mouthpiece serves me adequately, shall be kindled with a sense of that beauty which, in spite of all your follies and treasons, is yours uniquely. For though the whole career of your species is so confused and barren, and though against the background of the rise and fall of species after species, and the destruction of world after world, the life of any individual among you, even the most glorious, seems so completely ineffective and insignificant, yet in the least member of your or any other species there lies for the discerning eye a beauty peculiar not only to that one species, but to that one individual. To us the human dawn is precious for its own sake, and it is as creatures of the dawn that we regard you, even in your highest achievement. To us the early human natures and every primitive human individual have a beauty which we ourselves, in spite of all our triumphs, have not. The beauty, namely, of life's first bewildered venturing upon the wings of the spirit, the beauty of the child with all its innocent brutishness and cruelty. We understand the past better than it can understand itself, and love it better than it can love itself. Seeing it in relation to all things, we see it as it is. And so we can observe even its follies and treasons with reverence, knowing that we ourselves would have behaved so had we been so placed and so fashioned. The achievements of the past, however precarious and evanescent, we salute with respect, knowing well that to achieve anything at all in such circumstances and with such a nature entailed a faith and fortitude which in those days were miracles. We are therefore moved by filial piety to observe all the past races of men, and if possible, every single individual life, with careful precision, so that, before we are destroyed, we may crown those races our equals in glory, though not in achievement. Thus we shall contribute to the cosmos a beauty which it would otherwise lack, namely the critical yet admiring love which we bear toward you. But it is not only as observers that we, who are of man's evening, are concerned with you, children of the dawn. In my earlier message, I told how the future might actually influence the past, how beings such as my contemporaries, who have in some degree the freedom of eternity, may from their footing in eternity reach into past minds and contribute to their experience. For whatever is truly eternal is present equally in all times, and so we, in so far as we are capable of eternity, are influences present in your age. I said that we seek out all those points in past history where our help is entailed for the fulfillment of the past's own nature, and that this work of inspiration has become one of our main tasks. How this can be, I shall explain more fully later. Strange it is indeed that we, who are so closely occupied with the great adventure of racial experience, so closely also with preparations to face the impending ruin of our world, and with research for dissemination of a seed of life in remote regions of the galaxy, should yet also find ourselves under obligation toward the vanished and unalterable past. No influence of ours can save your species from destruction. Nothing could save it but a profound change in your own nature, and that cannot be. Wandering among you, we move always with foreknowledge of the doom which your own imperfection imposes on you. Even if we could, we would not change it. For it is a theme required in the strange music of the spheres.